Welcome to the Real and Raw podcast, a conversation with a couple of religious rebels. I am Carrie Jo, and I'm here with Anna today, and we are going to hear Anna's story. So Anna, thanks for showing up and being ready to bare your soul.
Hi, Carrie Jo. Thanks for asking good questions today. I'm looking forward to sharing.
Yeah, and I'm definitely looking forward to hearing about your side of things. Mm-hmm. We already heard about mine, so it's time to hear from the other host. We're just going to get right into it. We're not going to waste any time. Give us a little story of your upbringing, your background, kind of the foundation that was laid for you growing up.
Yeah, I grew up in a fundamental Christian family, but we didn't go to church that much, and my parents didn't talk about their faith very much. So I ended up going to church with friends growing up, off and on. Kind of like I became like adopted daughter to a couple of different families throughout the years, and it was in those situations where I got most of my religious influence. And I was about 8 when I was at a vacation Bible school, and I felt very strongly about asking Jesus into my heart. I remember it very vividly. I remember the invitation was given, and I looked around and nobody else was going up. And I mean, I was 8 years old, and I felt like this strong pull to Jesus.
Wow. Yeah.
So that started it for me, but I didn't have a lot of consistent influence after that. I held on to it. It was very real to me, but I didn't really know what to do with it other than just to know that Jesus loved me. And then I was probably about 17, 18. I was 17, and I had a close friend of mine that died, and it shook me so much because of, there's a lot of interesting times in my journey as a Christian where I feel like something very real and spiritual happened. And I still look back on some of those situations and wonder exactly what happened. And in this particular one, the night before the week before, I had a really vivid dream that a friend of mine had died. And so I made a trip to travel where he was a couple hours away to go visit him. And we got to hang out, and when I was leaving him, I felt really strongly, you know, as a Christian, we're supposed to share Jesus with everybody, right? We're supposed to mm-hmm. help each other get to heaven. And I felt he wasn't a Christian, and I knew I needed to share Jesus with him, and I didn't. I chose not to because I knew he was just going to laugh at me. Not just at me, but like at the idea, you know? And so I left, and like within a week, he had died in a motorcycle accident. I didn't know exactly that was going to happen, but I felt like in some ways I'd been given a premonition that it was. And so that was really profound and brought me to my knees, that I had this vision, that this prediction that was going to happen, and it did. And that had some other dreams surrounding that situation that were really profound. I won't go into them today, but it really convicted me. And because my belief system around at that time, what I had been brought up in, the ways in which I had to explain these type of things were surrounded around the Bible. And so I attached my belief system, immediately went to scripture and to Jesus. So that was pretty big, and it clung my heart and mind to the scriptures to try to find answers to life. And but I was always kind of on the fringes of religion in general, challenging the status quo. And so as we raised, Ricky and I, my husband, raised our family, we took scripture very seriously, but we also always challenged the church and the teachers that were trying to influence us to some degree. And so we did home church and kind of stayed out of the structured, you know, brick and mortar church, because we didn't want to submit ourselves to the dogma there. We wanted to create our own, if you will, based on our own understandings. So we've kind of always been a little challenging of what is of the, I guess, what the status quo of religion at the time, especially. So that's kind of my story upbringing, I think. That probably concludes, I could go on, but that's the most of it.
Yeah. No, that's great. Thanks for that. No, that's interesting to hear that there's almost a thread of deconstruction through your entire Christian experience. When you state that you and Ricky have always kind of challenged the system and you were very resistant to the dogma. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I would love to hear at what point do you feel like your deconstruction process actually began? Because it seems as if it's woven throughout your whole journey. But what point in time were you like, oh, yeah, something's happening?
Yeah.
So tell me about that process for you.
And it is really hard to pinpoint, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think you and I briefly talked about this before, about your journey, because I do feel like, you know, Ricky and I were the tattooed, like, you know, piercings, like home church, home births, like we just kind of always did things our own way. And so in a way, I feel like I was deconstructing scripture and my beliefs about who Jesus was and the church from the very beginning, because I knew there was always going to be influence from man, you know, in all of those things. And so I wanted to try to get as real and raw version <Yeah. laughs> of Christianity that I could, because I knew the story of Jesus was powerful.
Right.
But and I wanted to believe that. I wanted to believe in the power of, and also the mystery. You know, it's funny because even after coming out of Christianity, I still want the mystery of life I still want to meditate on and ponder about the mystery of life. And the scripture gave us some type of structure and explanation of why things were somewhat the way they were. But, you know, I always knew too that everybody was cherry picking, you know, because if you really study scripture, well, you know, intently, you come across a lot of things pretty regularly that you're like, wait a minute, nobody does this, you know?
Exactly.
Yes. So I knew that early on that everyone was cherry picking. I didn't realize that how strong, like what that really meant. And I didn't know that term, but I always knew that everybody was picking and choosing. And so I began to try to understand early on. I was studying a lot as a young person and wanted to, you know, I had Bible studies at home, and we had a lot of like groups where we'd get together and just dissect scripture. So I felt like in a lot of ways, it's just always been there, the awareness and the desire. But the questions that eventually were the straw that broke the camel's back are ones that I kept tabling, expecting that maybe with enough maturity and time, I would eventually come to the answers. You know, maybe if I studied enough and became mature enough and maybe even got chosen, if you know, I would get some of those answers. And you'll see here eventually that I got tired of waiting.
Yeah. Yeah, do you mind sharing a couple of those questions that you tabled that you feel like maybe, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like those questions maybe catapulted you deeper into the deconstruction process. Do you mind sharing that with us?
Sure. I have a list.
And you don't have to go down the whole list, but maybe the one pivotal thing that really started the whole ball rolling.
Yeah. Really, hell and the story of how scripture came about, those two things were the most pivotal shifts and what happened was I you know, whenever we go through something really painful or we go through suffering, it has a way of drawing a consciousness to the surface in us that we maybe didn't realize that we needed. Or it just has a way of waking us up. And I went through a time of suffering where I was bedridden, I was sick, and I finally took the time to really, like, I was in pain, but the first thing that came to my mind as that awareness and consciousness, the pain that brought about this, I immediately was like, I need to tackle these questions. And there was some of the, hell was a discussion. I think Rob Bell was talking about maybe around that time or shortly after. I can't remember. And a lot of people, I think, were challenging the idea of it, at least in my circle of friends. But the story of scripture, those two things, I just was like, I'm gonna, like I'd always done, do my own research and figure out what's going on with these two subjects. And that's what I did. And that changed everything for me. That time of just complete devotion to nothing else. I couldn't get out of bed, like just focused on studying, and it's big quickly unraveled.
Yeah, well, that is that's an amazing segue actually to the next question I had for you. I was going to ask you about specific steps that you took to kind of unravel these doubts or questions, and it sounds like research was a really important part of that. Are there any other things that you employed? Maybe even give specific books or people who, like you mentioned Rob Bell. Are there any other resources that you'd want to share with people who are listening that might help them in their process of unraveling the doubts?
Honestly, I can say that without a shadow of a doubt, there was one. I researched a lot of New Testament scholars, particularly ones that taught at colleges, and I wanted to hear what are they teaching people? Like, what are these guys that have spent 20, 30 plus years studying the New Testament text, or mainly New Testament text? What are they teaching the next generations? Like, they've spent their entire lives studying. And Bart Ehrman and Daniel Wallace, they did a debate on YouTube. Anybody can look it up and find it. To me, that was life-changing, that particular debate. It changed my whole world. I think I listened to it so many times, because I took so countless notes. And I mean, I figured they were telling the truth, but I still had to research some of the things that they said just so I could better understand what they meant. And I learned a lot too, because although I had studied scripture my, whole adult life at this point, like, I still, there were things they were talking about that I didn't know enough about or hadn't heard before. So, it was a journey of really, Ricky, my husband and I were talking about this the other day. It was a journey of, waking up to a degree of study that we had truly never done before. And so and when that's what we did. I mean, there weren't really honestly, we didn't read a lot of books. At this time, we were listening to a lot of scholars, YouTube scholars, and I had right before this, we had ventured down the path of studying Torah. And really, that was a last-ditch effort for me to find out if there was any way I could find the answers there. And I did that for about a year. I studied Torah and the Hebrew. I studied Hebrew with a professor on YouTube, and just to try to understand the language. I felt like if I went deeper, I could maybe understand it more, and some of the other questions besides hell and the story of scripture, those I was tackling some of the other questions by doing that, and I found that it got more confusing. So I'm kind of backtracking here, but that led me to this finally realizing that, okay, I didn't want to just give up Christianity. I didn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, but I felt like I was giving it my best effort, and I kept coming up short, and the answers to the questions just weren't sufficient. There weren't answers to some questions,
Definitely. And I think anybody who is in the middle of their deconstruction journey or wherever they're at and the timeline of that would agree to that. There are questions that we just don't have the answers to that we were probably told there were answers to in evangelical fundamental circles, you know, if this, then that. But really, it goes back to what you were mentioning earlier about just holding space for the mystery of things and be able, like, giving yourself permission to wonder and to not have the answer and be okay with there not being an answer. And sometimes that's a hard place to be, but I think with time, I don't know about you, but I have found that that's a really beautiful place for me to be. I can just cease all striving of trying to figure things out.
I felt when I finally got to the point of where I realized that this I was striving to figure everything out. Like I'm like, wait a minute, why is this so hard? You know, like why am I listening to scholar after scholar who's literally devoted their entire lives, they're in their 60s, you know, and 50s and 60s, there and they've devoted their entire lives to studying the original, like what, not the originals, but just like as much as the originals that we have, you know. But everything that we have available to man today in regards to scripture, and they're still disagreeing. Like the scholars themselves are disagreeing, you know. And here is little old Anna, who's just watching YouTube videos and trying to do the best she can with the resources she has. And I'm still, and I'm not even touching a fraction of what some of these scholars have touched, and they still disagree, you know. And some of them are former Christians that now have decided that that's not for them. You know, I started really being like, man, this is intense, you know. It got intense for me internally, especially more than anything. So I guess that Bart Ehrman was the biggest influence, I would say, on my shift.
Yeah, I love him. I love his thoughts on hell and end times too. He's great. I agree. I love him. Maybe one day we'll have him on our podcast. Wouldn't that be
Oh my
amazing?
gosh, just the thought of you saying that made me shiver inside.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what we can do. We might have strings we can pull. We'll see. No, you mentioned about like internally, you know, feeling things shifting and the changes that happen. Can you talk to us a little bit about how did those changes affect your marriage, the relationship with your family, your kids, you know, brothers, sisters, parents? Give us a little glimpse into that part of your story.
Sure. Well, I was doing a lot of this research on my own, and I wasn't sharing it with my family for a while. And then I invited them in when I was feeling like that intensity that I was talking about a second ago, like where things were starting to shift, like enough to where I felt like I couldn't go back. You know, like I know too much now. Like it's kind of one of those things. And so I remember waking up one morning and just talking to my husband about the fact that I felt like I was at a point of no return. And I didn't want to share this with my husband and my family, my kids, until I knew, like in my heart, that it was the right time, because I didn't want to shatter their world, and if it, unless it was really necessary, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when I shared it with my husband, he was a little shaken at first, but calm and definitely patient. And he decided that after we discussed it, that he was gonna just come alongside me, and we were gonna find the answers together. He trusted me. And I really actually give him a lot of credit for that, because I know it could have gone a number of different ways. And I was surprised, honestly. I thought he would be more mad or frustrated or more defensive, I guess, to our faith. But he actually wasn't. And I guess that's a testament to a lifetime that we had together of always challenging what people say is true, you know. And So yeah, we started doing it together. We started watching the same videos and reading the same stuff and having a lot of discussion. We invited a friend of ours who had deconstructed already into our journey, and that helped tremendously. And he did a lot of listening more than telling us what he'd already learned. He mostly listened to us and asked a lot of really good questions. And that was really helpful, like beyond helpful. It was really, 'cause you could feel really alone when you're in this process.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
having our friend with us, and it was just over the phone, he was long distance, but we would just call him or video conference call or whatever, and it just helped tremendously for us to just process with him. And then eventually sharing it with the kids, what we are we're learning. All of them took it really, really well. I think I remember you saying that yours are like, duh, mom, you know?
Yeah, bless their little hearts.
Yeah, right. And mine were the same way, pretty much. I mean, I would say my oldest daughter was probably struggling with it the most, but the rest of them were like, yeah, that we're on board with you, mom. Like, we get it, and that makes sense. So everybody took it slightly differently. Their own journey after that turned out to be, everybody's a little different. And so, but we gave them the freedom to be involved in the process, our process, but also ask their own questions and have their own journey as a result. I did this one thing, and I don't know how successful it was, but I did put a, because it can, for me, it felt really like, because the foundation had been ripped out from underneath us, it felt like shaky ground. It felt shaky to me, And so I put this book, like a spiral notebook, on the table with a pen, because we homeschool, so the kids are always around. And I was just like, look, if you guys come up with a question or an idea or something that you just want to share, but you don't feel comfortable saying it, or you just want to process together later on, then write it in this book. And but then if it's something that you want to hold on to that you feel like maybe we're losing, or if it's something you want to research together or whatever, just write it down in this book and we'll talk about it. And I felt like it, to some degree, it was successful. I think it was a little challenging for them to think like that when some of them were so young, but it definitely gave us a platform when we would have family meetings to kind of discuss a little bit about where everybody was at. And I think I say family meetings, but yeah, and every week, probably like once a week, we would get together and just talk and just give everybody a chance to share. I think that helped a lot too. So
Yeah, that's
everybody,
beautiful.
it is really, we did really well considering how unshaky, how shaky it felt.
Yeah, that makes me want to be part of your family. I want to have weekly meetings where we sit down and share.
Oh, that's
Oh, I
awesome.
love that. I love that you gave your kids opportunity to voice anything they were feeling, whether it's related to, the spiritual journey or anything. I think that's really healthy. I'm so glad that you had that person also, that friend that could listen and just be available for you to process. I know that has been really important for me as well, to have certain people that are safe that I can share with. Yeah, it's amazing how, people show up at just the right time to give you what you need, and they probably will never know the profound impact that they have on your lives. But yeah, that's beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. So, we've talked a lot about searching for answers to certain questions and maybe finding the answer or not. But it's also a process of unlearning things that we've been taught, doctrines that we've held on to as truth or ways to live our lives. Can you share with us one thing that you've unlearned that maybe has freed you up to pursue something or look into something that you've always been curious about or always wanted to know more about, but maybe didn't feel the freedom before to do so?
One of the things I th the thing that comes to mind the most with this particular, I've it's there's a few things probably for me, but One is just, as a Christian, I struggled greatly with the fear of hell and losing people to it and or disappointing God. And that affected, I mean, that those things are really can just like they dominated my thoughts. Am I doing enough? And have I talked to this friend or that friend? And the reality of that type of reality, it frames your worldview so drastically that really everything is affected by it. And for me, one of the biggest changes was letting go of all of that has simplified my thoughts and relieved me of that struggle and created more peace in my heart and mind. And so I've been able to research some things like Buddhism, and particularly that I'd always been interested in, but never really allowed myself to dive into it as much as I probably wanted to. So I think that would probably be the genuine practice of meditation probably is, I've always, meditation is such a broad term and I think everybody practices it in some way, shape or form. But the art of actually sitting still, calming the mind and allowing thoughts to flow and acceptance to reign, is an art form that I really started to dive into as a result of this newfound freedom. And I felt like I was able to do it in a way that, I wasn't so preoccupied with the struggles of my Christian faith and whether or not I was doing the right thing, not of newfound freedom there. And so that would probably be my answer is, just meditation in general, I think.
Yeah. It sounds awesome.
I know that I practiced meditation when I was a Christian. I meditated on the scripture all the time, every day, But right. I was still, I was still keeping it in that framework, on that foundation of scripture. And not having that foundation of scripture allowed for me to just be. It sounds so
simple. That's a beautiful place.
It sounds so simple, but just being able to allow myself just to be without having to do anything or say anything or prove anything. It's beautiful. Still is.
Yes. 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 I have had similar experiences and it is beautiful. That is awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. So, okay. You mentioned meditation has been really pivotal for you and looking into Buddhism as well. Is there anything beyond that that you would add to kind of round out the picture of what spirituality looks like for you today? And it'll probably look different from today, 2 years from now, but right now in this moment, what does spirituality look like for you?
Sure. Yeah, Buddhism's been a huge influence. I would say I joined a Sangha. I didn't join. That sounds like I joined a church, but I started attending a Sangha from time to time here in my hometown. And I also, Eckhart Tolle, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, but Eckhart Tolle. His book, The Power of Now, it changed my life too. My Sangha and Eckhart are two big, huge influences, but what that ends up looking like is just a lot of, I might have a ritual in the mornings. I get up in the morning and you're asking about my spiritual life, but it ends up manifesting itself really in what I choose to think about and the rituals that I choose to partake in. And, because that, I think spirituality bleeds over into everything that we do, even the, you know, making my food or taking a bath or hugging my husband, you know. But yeah. The practices that I do, the rituals that I choose to partake in that help keep me centered on the ideas that I believe are important for my own health, physical, mental, spiritual health, would be getting up in the morning. And for me, looking at the morning sun, spending some time in meditation, and walking in my garden. Those things have helped me just stay centered and give me a sense of belonging and purpose and peace that I carry throughout my day. And whenever I feel like if I don't get a chance to do those things, or if I ever feel like disconnected in some way, I come back to like, I'll just go outside and just walk through my garden, or spend some time in nature. Another thing that I've been practicing for quite some time is Qigong. It's kind of like Tai Chi, but it's like meditative movement. And it focuses on the Qi in the body that would just balancing our inner Qi. So, but it's more about just movement and connecting with my body. So like the meditation, I can sit still and I can meditate for 15, 20 minutes. But when I go to do Qigong, it's like meditation and movement where I'm,
that's awesome.
Yeah. I'm able to just connect with my body and listen to, myself and try to, pay attention to what's going on inside of me in my physical body. So yeah, that's some of my spiritual practice. I think traditions that we had as Christians, some of them we still keep. Some of them are still really important to us, and that maybe we could talk about that at another podcast. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, that's a great topic.
Yeah. But yeah. For me, the art of acceptance is huge too. That's a very Buddhist thing, but you know, the prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That is really important to me, that idea. And so I've gone back through some of those old prayers, songs, that I used to have as a Christian, and I've rewritten them for myself. Writing is another spiritual practice for me. And so I've rewritten, and I write a lot, just my thoughts and ideas. And it's another form of meditation, I guess, just writing, just free form thought, you know, just like flowing with a pen has been really, integral in my process of, the next stage, I guess. But that's always been like that. I've always used that as part of my journey.
But, yeah, that's awesome. I think a lot of people will relate to that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people find journaling to be helpful. I've never found journaling to be helpful, to be honest. But in my deconstruction process, I have found that writing haiku has been a really beautiful outlet for me to kind of blow off steam. To just really be expressive. And sometimes I'll write haikus that are just maybe a little too real and raw. Mm-hmm. And then I will light them on fire afterwards. And it's just kind of like an offering. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like putting it back out into the atmosphere. And I think there's a lot of healing to be found in writing and getting thoughts down. That's beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Well, that takes us to current day. We started back from you growing up, mm-hmm. and hearing your story there to all the way to today. I have one last question for you. What is something that you would tell Anna 10 years ago?
Acceptance is the key. like I was talking about just a second ago with God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I've always known that prayer, but I don't think I've ever really truly understood what it means to accept. And I've had an illusion that I could change the outcome of situations or people. I could change people. I've had this illusion, I think, within my Christianity that I could do that. And I think I would tell myself that it's not possible and just accept the reality of what it is. And that would be hard to, I think it's that idea is not something that is very easy to do within the constructs of Christianity. Cause there's so much emphasis put on you being responsible in a way for, carrying out God's will. But if I were to tell myself to accept that that's not possible, I think that wouldn't have been received very well.
Yeah, it's kind of a loaded question.
It is a loaded question. And we talked about that briefly with you. It's like, if I could do one thing without it changing anything, if I could truly accept the reality that I cannot change most things, then I think that would have been a really good step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that's generally good advice across the board.
I mean, obviously there's things that we can control, like whether or not I put on my seatbelt when I go out in the car, you know, like there are things we can control, but in general, like what happens as a result when I start the car and start driving down the road, I can't control everybody around me. I can't control even how my car functions, or completely at the mercy of everything else.
Right. Right. And
truly accepting that. But I think that's hard as a parent too. You know, you want to be the best parent you can be and create the environment that your children need to grow up to be the best people that they can be. And accepting as you and I are at our stages where our kids are adults, basically. I'm learning at least that I screwed up a lot of ways, and that's okay. I just have to accept it and ask for forgiveness and move on.
Yeah. Easier said than done, but yeah, that's been part of my recent experience with parenting as well. Mm. Just acknowledging, oh, I really screwed that up. And the kids are always so gracious to say, you know, it's okay. Or maybe it wasn't even on their radar as something that was messed up. But yeah, it's part of the healing journey, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, Anna, we are nearing the end of our time. I want to thank you so much for just being open and vulnerable and sharing about your journey, giving us a Reader's Digest version of your story. And, yeah, thank you. Thank you for just the real and rawness that you bring to the conversation. It's beautiful. We accept you right where you are, and love you so much for who you are. And we'll look forward to delving deeper into some of the things that you brought up in your story today in future podcasts.
Carrie Jo, thank you so much. I just so appreciate what we're doing together. It's so fun.
It is. We've got a lot of fun ahead of us.